Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, excited as always to jump into these. As always, want to start a podcast and thank our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce. Three simple ingredients, one fantastic product, something that I use three times a day at this point, and couldn't have partnered with better people.
Ingram, if you use it three times a day, you may need to go see a doctor, buddy. But you're right. They are our title sponsor, a proud company, and man, we love Louisiana Hot Sauce. It's perfect. Just the right amount of heat. We've had a lot of listeners tell us, hey, you guys are right about that. Like, you know, a couple shakes, decently hot, a lot of shakes really can kick it up. But it's not one of those hot sauces that's just going to light you up if you just do a shake or two. You know, we've all probably had hot sauces like that where you can ruin your food when it's just too hot. And you know what? Nobody needs something that hot. I don't think so. So Louisiana Hot Sauce, proud to have them as our title sponsor again for 2018.
Bud, why don't we start tonight's podcast by a look back at the past weekend on the hard court. Didn't have many expectations. Really happy with kind of where the program was when you look at a 10-year window and what they've achieved. But damn, if last weekend wasn't a whole hell of a lot of fun. And got a basketball team that is dancing in the Sweet 16.
Man, how cool was that? Florida State's in the Sweet 16. Like you said, man, zero expectations for this team. Come out, I mean, just beat the heck out of Missouri. That was great after all the quotes everybody thought about him. And to be honest, I didn't necessarily expect him to win. I didn't think it'd be a blowout, you know, either way, but you never really can tell. I mean, upset city in the tournament, and Florida State is going out there doing that, playing hard, showcasing their depth. What an excellent coaching job by Leonard Hamilton. Everybody wants to talk about the depth and the length, and look.
Athletic. But that Florida State team sure
is. It is athletic. Guess what? You got to recruit those guys. There's a lot of teams you can't say that about, and that's because you're not able to recruit those guys. But, you know, good job getting them ready to play. They don't crater against Xavier, and I think Xavier thought they would because last year Xavier took it to them. This year, look, this is a really good example of why you should not base your opinions of a coach on its success or lack thereof in a tournament format. A tournament is a great way, entertainment-wise, to decide a champion. It is not necessarily the best way to determine the best team, right? A series, a full season, generally does a better job of showcasing team quality. Last year's Florida State team was, no doubt, in my mind, better than this year's team. Last year's Xavier team was not as good as this year's Xavier team. What happened? Last year's Xavier team blew out last year's Florida State team. This year, a better Xavier team, a number one seed, loses to a Florida State team that's nowhere near as good as they were last year. Down three NBA players, some other guys on the team hurt or lacking confidence, and they still pull it off. That was cool to watch, man. That was. Did you think they were going to pull it off?
Being encouraged that they were in the game, you know, they never really let it get away from them. Certainly there's some times where you didn't have to feel particularly confident, but I just had a strange feeling of being kind of comfortable with where the game was pretty much throughout the entirety of the game. As soon as 55 fouled out, a cautious optimism turned to a very real, like, ooh, yeah, they may beat the number one seed, or, you know, or a number one seed in the country. They may legit be going to the Sweet 16. So it was a hell of an ending, and it was great. Friday night was kind of weird. It got delayed, and then like the whole sporting universe basically, you know, tractor beamed onto the phenomena that was the UMBC UVA game. But to come back and be able to watch them play a opponent that level on Sunday night and ultimately get the win. Just a heck of a weekend and a very well deserved weekend for the diehard basketball fans.
That was really cool, man. I was excited to see that. An awesome job at Leonard Hamilton and company. And you know, Ingram, they're in the right bracket to get there. I'm not saying they're going to get there. Like they're not like favored to get there, certainly. But if you want to know what their odds are to get there, I got to tell you, it's not that bad.
It almost feels like it's going to happen if they win Thursday night, just with a ridiculously, I don't want to say easy matchup. It's not an easy matchup, but to think that you would have to play Michigan or Texas A&M to get to the Final Four would be a heck of a jump ball situation. Yeah.
Okay. So just think about it this way. they're basically only like 3-1 tomorrow night against Gonzaga. They're plus 217. That's not bad. If you take this, right, I think their odds against A&M or Michigan would actually be slightly better, right? I mean, probably.
I think their odds against A&M would be, I don't know if significantly better, but better.
Coin flip-ish, like somewhere between now and coin flip.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you say like they're 3.2 for Gonzaga and, I don't know, 2.35 or something for A&M or Michigan. Dude, we're talking legitimately. Their odds to make the Final Four are like better than 10-1, probably like 7 or 8-1. The way I got to that, folks, by the way, is just parlaying the current odds and the potential odds for the next game. I mean, are they the favorite to get there? No, they're clearly the least likely of the four teams left in their region. But damn, like, it's not very often that your team there has 15-18% chance to go, your lowest seed. That's very impressive. This is a really cool opportunity, and like you said, it's just all house money, man. Because we know they're playing a little bit over their heads, but God, if you could play over your heads for two more games, that'd be awfully sweet. That would be that'd be a hot streak, a Louisiana hot sauce streak. By the way,
it'd be
shout out to pro golfer Hank Lobota today, who tweeted at us their hospitality spread with all the different types of Louisiana hot sauce. Do you know about the jalapeno Louisiana hot sauce or the roasted garlic Louisiana hot sauce?
I will just say, but we're very familiar to have some friends in that company, and I've been able to sample about every offering they have, and we may be efforting to bring the Nullcast listeners a little bit more wider variety of options here in the future.
Dude, that's gonna be pretty cool. Maybe some giveaways, and certainly at the Nullcast tailgate at Township, which I know we'll talk about as well. Have you got your shirt though for your Nullcast Township tailgate?
I have placed my order. I've had some friends inquire about it as well. I would encourage everybody to do so. We've got another 5 days, and we are very honestly humbled by the feedback we've received so far, but really very much excited for the event that's less than a month now.
5 days from Wednesday. So probably when people hear this, 4 days. Hey, 5 o'clock, March 26th, orders have got to be in. What do you get? You get an awesome Nullcast t-shirt. You can see a proof of it on our Twitter account or on TomahawkNation.com when I put this post up. $25 gets you the shirt, supports your favorite podcast, and you get a free War Daddy Lager. That's the new beer that they're debuting this week at the spring game tailgate. Be pretty awesome. It's brewed by Brewbus in Tampa. It's going to be a nice, good drinking beer, and you got to wear your shirt to the tailgate to get your free beer. No pickup day of. No, hey, I bought the shirt, but I didn't wear it. Got to have the shirt on. Got to buy it in advance, and it's going to be a great time. Hope to have a couple hundred of you there. And, look, guys, don't procrastinate more on this. We really got to get these things sold, and we want to see y'all talk a little Gulf Coast offense, talk a little Harlan Barnett defense, and just a little talking ball, a little sipping some beer, and that'll be good. Probably need to talk a little football, though.
I was going to say, somebody else talked a little ball today. So first chance we had to hear from – or I don't want to say first chance we had to hear, but the first kind of press conference, kind of a rite of passage for spring, let you know where you are on the football calendar. Had a chance to hear Willie Taggart talk a little bit long form about what his plans were, and a couple different things I know stood out to the two of us in just reviewing his press conference from today.
First, some stuff that he confirmed that, look, Nullcast listeners already knew, but some people maybe didn't, so... I know we told y'all when we were talking about Walt Bell, the offensive coordinator / quarterback coach, how did Taggart find him? I said, we did the research on us. We went back and looked, and Walt Bell was hired by DJ Durkin. DJ Durkin, of course, was hired by Jim Harbaugh, who hired Willie Taggart, Harbaugh. So connection there. He actually mentioned that in the press conference. Somebody said, how did you find Walt Bell? And he said, well, I knew him through DJ Durkin, and I was also impressed with his work at Arkansas State, and I saw Maryland score a whole bunch of points on a Texas defense that didn't have that happen very much to them this year. Also, he confirmed that he will be calling the plays, as we've said, but also that he, meaning Taggart, but also that Greg Fry and Walt Bell will be working ahead to have play ideas, which is exactly what happened at Oregon. he had two guys working ahead, thinking about, okay, if this happens, then we can do this. If this happens, we can do this. If we need a run coming up here, what if we get in short yardage? Okay, then we'll go to this. All right, we already did this. What's our counter for this coming up? If you're going to play at tempo, you got to be organized. You got to be thinking ahead. That's a lot for a head man. That's why you have some guys working ahead like that. So that'll be Greg Fry thinking ahead, on especially on runs, and Walt Bell on passes and working with quarterbacks. So if you wanted to know which two guys were working ahead on that kind of stuff, along with some GAs, I'm sure, in some capacity, that will be Bell and Fry. We'll also have some audio here from this. The first thing that I thought was interesting, look, this whole thing is going to be fast, 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 man. They want to go fast. Tempo's a weapon if you have the depth to use it. And if you have superior players, you want to give them more at-bats. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, too. But here's our first clip of Coach Taggart specifically talking about the speed of practice and how they're not going to correct stuff for the most part on the field. They're going to wait to do it in the film room afterwards.
But we want to be smart. We want to fly around. Don't like a lot of standing around, you know, so we want to be a fast practice. You know, we get in and get our work done and get out. We'll do a lot of coaching on in the film room, but not stopping practice to necessarily slow down or just teach one or two things that you can get done on film. We're going to let our guys go play. They're going to make mistakes, and it's our job to correct them when we see them and then in the meeting room. But we want them to play fast and not worry about making mistakes.
One thing I take away from that is that they want to really focus on big picture fixes, right? Mm-hmm. Much like a golf swing, if I get out there on the range and you're my golf coach and you're like, bud, man, we need you to break 90 more consistently. So I got these 12 tips for you. They're like, 12 tips? Jesus. They want to focus on, like Coach Walt Bell says, suck a little less each day. All right. They want to focus on the major thing in your game that they needed to correct immediately. Now, that's not to say they'll never give you coaching tips in practice. They certainly will. But they're not stopping the rhythm and the flow of practice to do it all the time. They also want to focus on the biggest thing they can correct. And once you get that down, then they're going to focus on the next biggest thing. They want to evaluate a large sample set of your play to be able to figure out, okay, this was just a blip, and this is a real concerning trend. And the blip is just a blip, but the trend is something we need to get ahead of and cut off before it becomes a habit or a bad habit, really. So that's why they're trying to do that. Look, there's pluses and minuses to doing that. If you're going to emphasize tempo, though, this is kind of the way you need to do things. So that's something there, just something to take away from there. He also had a lot of questions, man, about quarterbacks.
He did. I don't know that there's too much to read into his comments about DeAndre Francois, but he did officially acknowledge that he's not really going to be able to be all that involved, but he can maybe take steps to secure his at least secure his place within the program as a leader, and he's got a little bit of work to do with his teammates.
Right now, he's going to be able to encourage his teammates, be a great leader, and keep rehabbing to get himself better so he can get out there and compete. You know, I don't see him doing a lot this spring. One thing he can do is continue to work on being a great leader and winning his teammates over and rehabbing to make sure that he's in the best physical shape so that he can compete when he come back out there, you know, and get a lot of mental reps while he's out there. He's got a lot of work to do, even though he's not out there on the football field. And we look forward to him working on those things that he needs to better himself and put himself in a position to where he can compete just like the rest of them.
Okay, so Ingram, one of the things there that I said, he said, continue to work on being a great leader and winning his teammates over. And we've had a lot of people ask us, does that mean he's already been doing that? I think he's worked on it, certainly some, but there's no question that he's not there yet, right? Like, if you ask, you know, is Francois the unquestioned leader of this team? No.
No.
I don't think the teammates believe it. I don't think the coaches believe that. Even today when they were doing, practice the reps on air, so like he wasn't being hit, so he's able to throw some in that thing. He wasn't with the ones. He was with the twos. Hockman was with the threes. Blackman's your one right now. I think that Francois has to work on showing up on time, really being a leader. I don't know how natural that is to him, man.
He's got to do it consistently. He's got to do all these things consistently.
I don't think there's a lot of people over there convinced he's going to do it. In fact, I think there'll be some people over there, if he does do it, that will be rather surprised. But he's got a clean slate with the new coaching staff. Some of the things that were allowed under the last staff, certainly like skipping games. Skipping games. I still can't believe that. That's not going to be allowed. You know, they track this stuff. Like we said, with their Dom Patrol and some of their discipline stuff, they've got a chart right there in the locker room. It's a point system, and it's a negative point system. If you screw up, you get points on the board. If you hit a certain number of points, you already know what your punishment is. There's no questions to be asked. You already know. You got to go do your punishment, whether that's some extra conditioning or, you know, suspension or losing playing time or whatever. And that goes for all players. But they do track that stuff. And so the other players can see who is not being accountable, who's not showing up to meetings on time, who's not coming to team dinners on, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, where they're all expected to be there. You know, who's showing up to class late or not coming to class. If you skip class, you definitely get points. All that kind of stuff. It's a good way to have everybody else hold each other accountable, you know, because they can all see, man, if this guy gets one or two more points, he's got a big punishment coming, or you know, he could miss playing time, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see with Francois. I mean, certainly he can work on becoming a better leader. And look, there's no guarantee that he comes back great from that injury. I mean, that patella is a tricky thing. If we recall going back a number of months, there were a lot of medical people who were out there like, man, that's a bad break for that kid, because that's not a real common injury that people come back and succeed with. Like, you know, I've got a friend who's a PT, and you know, she said, look, you want to generally have like a knee ligament or an elbow. They're easy. The success rate on those is real good. Hips and shoulders, because it's a different kind of joint,
yep,
not great. Achilles and patella, really not great. They're less common injuries, and they're tricky. He's got to work on being a leader and being a good teammate and a good person, but also he's got to hope that his knee gets right and that he's able to come back with it.
He spoke about Francois some, also spoke about Blackman. Sounds like he's pretty high on the quarterback that you just referenced is running with the ones currently, and also maybe went into a little bit of a pre-existing level of their relationship that maybe was not just general knowledge to the everyday fan.
I saw you picked up about 12 pounds. You started to see a little cut. He's no longer straight. You started to see a little curve in his body now. So he's working, and working in the right direction. But I think with any quarterback, leadership is always going to be first and foremost. You know, you got to be able to lead the football team, you know. And I'm not just saying that the offense. I'm saying that the football team. I think when you see great football teams or teams that win championships, one thing you see that the team rallied behind their quarterback. And I think that comes with time. I think that comes with relationship building with him and this entire football team. So he's been doing a good job at that, you know, but he's got to continue to get better at that and then learn the offense a scheme, because it'll be different than what he had before. And learning, and then just go out and compete your best every single day and try to get better every single day. The kid have talent, you know, so that's not an issue. You just now applying that talent to the work and continue to develop. Want him to compete, he's competing, you know, and I'm sure Bailey's not going to make it easy on him. You know, they all competing, and when DeAndre get back out there, he's not going to make it easy as well. So, but we want them all to be that way, every single one of them, not just James, you know, because I think all of them can get better at those things.
So, look, hey, you know, actually who recruited James Blackman, one of the first in-state teams to really be on him? USF.
Right.
You know who was coaching USF at that time?
I believe it's an individual that we're familiar with now. Yeah.
Yeah, I should have put that together before, and I'm sorry. Maybe I did on a previous show. I don't recall, but if I didn't, yeah, that's pretty cool that he recruited Blackman before. You can tell he really likes that kid. The other, other teammates are really, really warming to him. Also, man, he does throw a pretty deep ball. He really does. He's not the most amazing runner in the world. He's mobile enough to make the defense respect him. You know, right now, if I had to bet on it, I'm putting my chips on Blackman, not on the other two. I believe that. That doesn't mean he's got a death grip on the thing by any stretch, but that's kind of cool. You know, the other thing, Ingram, with the quarterbacks is anybody who's playing QB is going to have some nice running backs to hand the ball off to, and you could tell Taggart was really happy about that.
I think he knows he's got a Cadillac at running back. Absolutely.
We've had times where we have at least 3 to 4 guys that's pretty good and pretty talented, and any one of them could get the job done. That's the beauty, again, of our offense, is that we got a lot of different personnel grouping to where we can get those guys on the field and allow them to play. But I don't think you can ever have enough running backs. You know, this game is a physical ball game, and you just never know with those guys when something can happen, you know. But I will tell you this, it's like, again, Christmas. With the guys that we do have here, we're pretty deep there. And it'd be a shame on us if we don't do the things we need to make sure those guys on the field are helping us.
Does Akers remind you of anybody you've coached before?
No, he's a little different. He's different. He's a sharp kid, too. He's a really sharp kid, and he's all about business and getting things done, and he's a pretty good football player, too. So, and then Cam, he's kind of like prototype. He's just how they're supposed to shave, about the right height, right speed, strength. And then when you meet and talk to the kids, like, man, why can't all of them just be like this, you know? I'm really excited to coach and watch him this spring.
But first of all, it's good to hear your head coach talk about a unique talent, or at least acknowledge that he's got something like that. But it's kind of interesting when we look at this, and he referenced a rotation between what we think Taggart will do, what his track record says he might do, and then kind of trying to make sense. I think you have to acknowledge that his track record is not one where there's a great amount of rotation when it comes to running backs. But while he has had really particular talented backs previously, I don't know that he's ever had any kind of amount of depth or that there's not kind of that precipitous fall off between back A to back B or back C from his previous places where he's coached.
I think you're exactly right about that. I mean, Royce Freeman at Oregon was much better than the backups there at Oregon, and
Mack,
total stud. Yeah, Marlon Mack was a stud at USF, and certainly you don't have a backup at USF who's as good as Marlon Mack. So, you know, Taggart's history has been that one guy got the ball. Overwhelmingly. In fact, I was looking up some stats on that earlier. In 2016, Marlon Mack had 1,187 yards. The next guy had 543. Previous year, Marlon Mack had 1,381. The previous guy had 461. So, you know, double or triple almost the whole time here. But then again, the backup was Darius Tice and D'Ernest Johnson and D'Ernest Johnson. Not exactly studs. So I do think that Taggart is excited about the ability to have, Kalon Laybourne or Zaquandre White or Amir Rasul or any number of backs in the backfield. As he said in the clip, you know, I think he is excited about that. But, man, you could tell he loves Cam Akers. And that's a big thing, because they're very worried about receiver depth right now, especially with Nooney Murray going down in practice today. Don't know what the thing is going to be. What the diagnosis is there. Don't want to speculate, but they're already pretty thin at the receiver position. So that's just something that we can keep an eye on.
So, Bud, one thing that stood out when we first saw a roster, I don't remember when it was, but earlier in the week or last week, you don't have any players with single-digit numbers currently. And I know he gave a rationale for that, and a lot of people have asked us about that, but personally, label me a fan of this. It may sound hokey or cheesy to others, but I like the fact that there's a little bit more has to be present before you start to hand out some of the things that are particularly motivating to today's youths, it seems.
You know, Willie rattled off some of the elites ever to wear the single-digit numbers and said, in my day, the dudes who wore the single-digit numbers, they were dudes. They were war daddies, and they were the ballers. And he said, in order to wear a single number of my team, it's a privilege, and you have got to meet all three of my criteria, which is classroom, character, and football. If you recall, when he took over, he said, look, in order to be on the team, you have to have two of the three, and we'll work with you on the third. So obviously, if you're really good in the classroom and football, most people who are really good at both those things are not going to be really bad character, but you get the point. They're going to work with you on whatever you need to improve in. But in order to wear the single-digit number, you got to be good in all three. And I think there are some guys who will get those single digits back. I think there's some guys, well, maybe we'll save that for a new and up-and-coming segment. Engram, we did talk to some sources as far as guys, you know, who have been around, some scouts and whatnot, about the differences in practice. And look, there's only been one practice, so we don't want to go overboard with this. But these are just things they noticed when we chatted with him today. Number one, it really is a lot faster. Okay? Now, I think this is important. Jimbo did run practices much faster than Bobby did. There was not a ton of standing around and wasted energy and motion at Jimbo's practices. So this is not like the idea like Jimbo ran real slow practices. However, the idea that the practices now are just as fast as they were prior, that's just false. That's not true. I mean, I'm talking to people who are at practices, even Jimbo's closed practices, and are at the new ones, and they're telling me, no, it's a lot faster. It's just a very different speed. Because I think part of it, because they're trying not to slow down and teach between every single thing. They're trying mm-hmm. to do larger wholesale corrections, you know, at one time in the film room after practice. And they're trying to incorporate the tempo culture. It's a tempo culture. They have better players. They have more depth than almost all their opponents. They want to wear them down. When the opponent subs, Florida State will sub. And guess what? Florida State's backups are almost always better than the opponent's backups. They want to play at that breakneck pace. If you're on the first team and you run your play now and you don't sprint off after the play to the sideline, you're getting chewed out because second teams are up and ready. And if you walk back, you're getting chewed out. They want you jogging back to be behind the third team, which is up behind the second team, because first team's about to be up again after third team goes. They want you moving a lot. They're actually getting a lot of cardio done during practice, even more than they were. So, yes, it is definitely a faster pace. We had some people send us some tweets from some folks who apparently think they know, but they don't. It is absolutely a faster practice by a noticeable amount. But yes, it is true that Jimbo did run practices a lot faster than what Bobby did.
So practices are moving at a quicker pace. Practices, and again, we don't want to make too much of this. It's still, we're examining.
It's been one practice.
It's been one practice. It's also been some of the conditionings and sessions and stuff like that leading up to it. But I think we're comfortable, one practice or not, saying that this is kind of a idea that's hard to fully grasp, but the energy level around the team is different. Again, don't want to make too much of one particular practice or one particular quote, but you can talk to enough kids or people around the program to get the idea that kind of the mentality surrounding official events is significantly different than what it was 6 or 8 months ago, definitely.
Oh, there's no doubt. People are more excited about this. And they're having like dance-offs during the water breaks. Is that going to help make you better at football? Not directly. Could that make you better if you're more excited about going to practice because you're actually having fun at practice? Yes, there could be an indirect benefit to that if it improves your whole idea about practice, about wanting to go to practice. A lot of these kids, man, practice was a slog. They really didn't enjoy it. And anybody who's played football can understand that on some level. But there's also days when you really are excited about going to practice and you want to have more of those days. I thought Marvin Wilson's quote about how, you know, practice, football finally felt fun again to him. It didn't feel like a job. You know, that's a good quote. You need a certain level of intensity. It can't just be all, you know, all screwing around. But I don't think it is. They're getting a lot of reps in. They're definitely getting instruction from the coaches, especially during an individual period. Whole lot of competition going on, by the way. That's something that was very noticeable.
I'm excited to hear. You know, again, if first year transition, you're always going to hear more times than not, you're going to hear positive stories as far as the changes that have made. That's just kind of human nature and what surrounds a program. But it certainly does nothing to tamper some of the excitement that surrounds the program as well. So, Bud, you mentioned that you know, some of their conditioning they get in just in the process of practice, and that it's run at a higher level. I also know that maybe there's more of a focus on, like, and not, look, I'm not saying they line up and do Oklahoma for 25 minutes every day, but that there's more of a focus on 1v1s, and while there's also, you know, everybody knows that technique is important and you're trying to teach these guys the right way to play, but there's also kind of a focus on the end result as far as really focusing and paying attention on 1v1 matchups and seeing who ultimately gets the better end of things.
One thing I think here is that they are, I'm not saying they're not detail oriented, but they are, I think, more open to guys doing some things their way, if those things will work. And let me explain it. I'm going to use a baseball reference here. Some guys will throw with an over-the-top arm slot. Some guys will pitch with kind of a three-quarter arm slot or sidearm or what have you. Some guys want to pitch, you know, standing on the first base side of the rubber. Some guys want to pitch on the third base side of the rubber. This staff is trying to win college football games. If you do something that's a little bit unorthodox and it works for you, as long as it's not going to hamper you when you play a better opponent, as long as it's not a bad habit, if it's just a different habit and it works, they're going to pretty much let you do it. Now, if it's a bad habit or they can see, hey, that's a fundamental like thing in your game that's going to hamper you down the road because we need to, this is an important building block that we're going to need to use later on to add this skill and this skill to your game or this technique and that technique. It works for you now, but it's not going to work for you, you know, come season, then they're going to change that. But I do think that they're doing a lot of one-on-ones right now to kind of see, hey, what's his go-to move? What does he do in this situation? What does he do in that situation? What does he have that he knows and he trusts? What move, what skill does he have confidence in? And man, maybe this guy's technique is a little bit different than how I teach it. But if he does that well, cool. I'm going to focus on other parts of his game that can improve. He's already got that part down. As opposed to, you know, like some staffs, I think would be a little more cookie cutter. Everybody must do this, every single thing the exact same way, that type of thing. There's going to be a certain amount of homogenous technique going on because there's certain techniques. But other things, you know, can be a little more individualized. And I think that is part of the idea that you don't want these guys having to think so much on the field and let instincts and athleticism take over a little more than perhaps they did in the past. And I think they're trying to accomplish that via one-on-ones, you know, let iron sharpen iron.
But as good a time of any to thank our friends at Resolution Home Loans, Chad and Shannon, fantastic supporters of the podcast, people that we're real excited to work with. Not necessarily a service that you need all the time, but when it matters, it's great to be able to pair with experts. And we're very, very fortunate and look forward to working with Resolution Home Loans and being able to deliver our listener base a very high-quality product.
Another great no loan business. You know, Chad runs the deal. Shannon is his number one loan officer. When you call 844-FSU-LOAN or visit FSUHomeLoans.com, that's who you're going to get. You're going to get to deal with Chad's number one guy, Shannon. He's not going to give you the runaround. He's going to talk to you about their Almost Home program and how that works. They pay for the underwriting cost up front, so you don't have to. And so you know, hey, you're going to be good for this amount. They want to take the guesswork out of it. They want to get you ready, right? When you see the opportunity, if the defense isn't lined up, let's get that ball snapped. Let's stop messing around and stop huddling. When you see that house you want because you've already done the Almost Home program, let's go. Let's get that house. 844-FSU-LOAN, FSUHomeLoans.com.
I know we already acknowledged the basketball team successes, and we've spent a decent amount of time talking about like the pace that the team wants to play and the fact that there's a speed limit sign on the practice fields now that reads fast. Well, why don't we kind of merge these two things? And there was a pretty interesting article I had the New York Times recently looking at UVA's loss and extrapolate what we can from that and kind of put a little bit of a football twist on it.
Yeah, okay. So there's a lot of different examples of this. You know, Virginia lost. They are an excellent team. They play a very unique, extremely slow style. But look, there's no doubt, and we've said this before, if you purposefully minimize the number of scoring chances for you and the opponent, if you're the better team, that limits your ability to build a big lead and to blow somebody out. And if you don't blow them out, and you're in a, you know, football-wise, a one-score game, you risk being upset. You also really hurt your player development, by the way, because you're not able to get your backups in. But this is kind of a different discussion. All right, quoting now from the New York Times story, quote, playing slowly leaves teams more vulnerable to upsets, said John Harris, a mathematics professor at Furman University who, with two other faculty members, Kevin Hudson and Liz Buzarf, has studied NCAA tournament upsets. He groups teams into giants and killers. The giants are always the better team. The variable is what improves the underdog's chances. The answer, it turns out, is when the giant-like qualities are minimized. Huh. because a slow pace means there's literally less basketball being played. Pictured in terms of an extreme case, Harris said, if each team had one possession, a killer is more likely to upset a giant. The more possessions you give a giant, the more likely it is they're able to separate, build a big lead, etc. It's the reason, he added, why you don't play the World Series in one game. The NCAA tournament is essentially six straight single-game World Series, and now Virginia is going home. Now, somebody tweeted to me, said, exactly. There's a famous quote about, if I'm going to play Jack Nicklaus in golf, I want to play him one hole only, par three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just makes sense. How much of this applies to football, do you think? How many games are we screaming, why in the hell is Florida State only have 9 or 10 possessions in this game?
No.
It's so hard to blow somebody out.
Yeah, exactly. Many years.
At least since like 2012?
It's a subject matter that listeners of the NOLcast and Florida State fans in general will be plenty familiar with. And the talk that we had about just given you've got the superior talent, you've got the superior roster, no reason to try to limit their at-bats. You want to play to the numbers and you want to play to your strengths, and you're going to spend all this time recruiting and getting these guys to send you a fax on the first Wednesday of February. Doesn't make much sense to then kind of have some kind of almost like a bunker mentality when it comes to the fall. So the UVA comparison, I think, is something that Florida State fans will be able to grasp pretty quickly.
Some quick notes here before we get into some recruiting notes. Wally Aim is going to defensive end. That's a permanent move. Some people saw him today at practice. I asked about that. And just an attempt to get him on the field. They have really good depth at defensive tackle. Their defensive end depth, especially on the strong side, is not as good. And so they'll be able to put him there kind of in that jumbo defensive end role. Jonathan Vickers and Gabe Neighbors, I think we previously reported this, but just in case we haven't, they are officially tight ends / H-backs now because there are no fullbacks in this offense. And Juwan Williams got some run today with the first team. Now, granted, Ingram, I really don't care about who runs with the first team and second team in a non-padded practice.
First practice. In any of our listeners out there, remember playing football, even, you know, 7th grade, 8th grade, high school football, you see some strange people that got to walk out there with the first team that maybe they wouldn't otherwise. So I'm not suggesting.
Especially before the pads are popping.
Right, and I'm not belittling Williams getting to do that. I'm just saying exactly what you said. I would not try to extrapolate anything from who lined up with the ones on the first practice of spring.
But I will say, you know, maybe it's good for that kid's confidence to be able to get him out there. He's certainly an athletic player. Hopefully he can stay healthy and pick up the offense. Do have some recruiting updates if people want to hear those, which I'm guessing they do. Arian Smith is a 2020 athlete from Mulberry, Florida, which is Polk County. That's Odell Hagan's territory. And he's a stud. He came and visited Florida State on Wednesday and told me that he loved the visit. It was great. He was super excited about it. His family loved it. And that's a kid who I think very early here, but I would pencil in the Florida State's 2020 class. Arian Smith, I would say 6 foot, 6'1", 175-ish, elite level athlete. Corner, DB, maybe receiver. Maybe you can let Harlan Barnett and David Kelly, you know, fight over who gets to coach him. But I like that kid a lot, and I think he'll be in Florida State's class more likely than not. Quarterback. Hey, Ingram, a quarterback visit. Look at this.
Mr. Fomicon. Is that how we're pronouncing it now?
Yeah.
Okay. Third Tyson charm.
Tyson Fomicon from Avon Farms, Connecticut, one of the top quarterback recruits in the country to the extent there are any this year. Again, it's a very down year for quarterback play. In the state of Florida, just downright embarrassing. It's garbage. I feel so bad for these receivers, all these camps that I go to, man, because they're working their butts off to get open against these elite-level defensive backs in the state of Florida. And
getting a lot of balls.
Guy throws the ball into the stands.
Yeah, okay.
I'm like, how the hell did he hit the bleachers? Like, that's great. I mean, you know, some of these are kind of close up, so not a whole lot of sideline width if there's not a track at a high school stadium. But still, that's pretty bad. Anyway, he loved the visit. Florida State feels that they connected with the family very well. Here's something for you. I don't know that Florida State's ready to take any quarterback right now if they wanted to jump on. The quarterback crop this year, it does not have an obvious elite player in it. So far, there's no Justin Fields. There's no JT Daniels. There's no Sam Howell. it would not surprise me if Florida State wants to see their eventual guy throw in camp. Now, this is something people criticize Jimbo for at times. I think we understood it. He was very particular about it, and he was pretty good at picking out quarterbacks. If that's what Willie Taggart wants to do, then that makes sense for the most part. Now, if there's an obvious stud out there, like if there's a Justin Fields or a Trevor Lawrence, you may not need to wait to see that kid throw for you in person. Like you can kind of go and see him at a spring practice and say, okay, all right, well, yeah, offer, and we'll accept it. But I think with you know some of these guys, there's some questions. How athletic is he really? I mean, what kind of competition does he play? You know, those type of things. It's not the worst thing to get a kid in camp, especially in a real down year like this. It's not Coach Taggart or the staff's fault, but the quarterback crop this year is just kind of sorry, man. Like there's the floor is not real good, and the ceiling so far is kind of unproven at best. But he's one of the absolute top targets on the board, and Florida State feels they did a great job today. Awesome to have him out there at practice, in a practice with so much energy and so much kind of renewed energy around the program.
Kid, we mentioned maybe ranked number one in the country. Not sure that he's necessarily going to settle there, but a guy who forever through this cycle will probably be a top five, top 10 recruit, Kayvon Thibodeau, West Coast kid. Can you give us kind of any update as to where Florida State stands?
Sure. So he actually did not make it to Tallahassee. But that's okay. That was not actually a surprise. What I was told is that when Florida State figured out that he was trying to do the Florida and Tallahassee visit in the same weekend and that he was going to Florida first, they did not want his impression of, like, if you recall back to the Emory Jones thing, Florida, like loaded down Emory Jones' schedule so much that he wasn't really able to,
leave on time. Right. Exactly. Yeah, I remember.
So, you know, they didn't want that to happen again. And this staff already has a good relationship with Thibodeau, the California defensive end, from their time at Oregon. So they said, hey, just go enjoy Florida. Check that out. How about you come back for our spring game and spend a whole weekend here? And so as of now, that's what the plan is. He's going to come back for the spring game and enjoy that. That should be pretty cool for him and his family. And that's good. Florida gets to showcase what they want to do with him, and Florida State gets to showcase what they want to do with him.
Any other names you want to mention or 2020 prospects that are starting to emerge?
Oh, well, we've got to mention Akeem Dent, by the way, who is up there seeing his brother, Ardarius Dent, who's already on the team as a walk-on. Also seeing his good buddy, James Blackman. James Blackman and Akeem grew up not too far from each other. They're really tight, and Akeem out there checking out practice, hanging out with his brother Ardarius. Some people are like, hey, do you think Akeem Dent's real solid? I've heard Miami's going to flip him. Like, yeah, I think he's, like, extremely solid. He's spending the whole week up there during a spring break with his brother, who's on the team, and one of his good buddies. His buddy happens to be the quarterback of the team. Yeah. I think they really like Akeem Dent, and I think Akeem Dent really likes Florida State. And at this point, it would take some minor miracle or major upset for him not to sign with the Noles. And yeah, there are some good names coming up, by the way, for Junior Day. A good mix, and Junior Day is going to be Saturday, by the way. I try not to do a whole lot of podcasting about, hey, this Junior Day is happening, Ingram, in 2 days, because some of y'all won't listen to this until Sunday or Monday, and by that time, we'll probably be working on our notes for the recap episode anyway. But Junior Day is coming up. It's the 24th. Here's a name for you. Tim Smith out of Sebastian River. I think he's an elite level, maybe top 50, top five-star type kid nationally next year out of Sebastian River. 6'5", 324. Was actually a baseball player for a while until he just kept growing. Very athletic kid. Good hand-eye coordination. His teammate Corbin Gibson is also pretty impressive. 2020, they've got the kids coming from Oakleaf. That's Jalen Rivers, an offensive tackle. He's a 20, and Chance Williams, who's a defensive end. He's a 20 as well. It'll be important to get a good impression on those kids. I know Miami's done a good job on them early on. Maurice Goolsbee hit us up to say that he's coming on a visit. He's a 2019 receiver out of Dunellen. They're still kind of figuring out what their recruiting board is for receiver this year. A lot of that, as we discussed in the prior episode, hinges on what happens with Frank Ladson. They only want to take two or three this year. If they're not able to get major traction with Ladson, who is their top receiver guy on the board, then they'll have to move on to some secondary targets. But they're still working on getting Ladson on a visit and see if that'll happen. But Goolsby's a good kid to stay in touch with, certainly a big body. And then Kalen DeLoach is a linebacker prospect out of Southeast Georgia, excuse me. Big-time hitter, energetic guy, all over the field. They like him a lot. He's picked up a lot of really solid national offers and should be a nice junior day. And look for a post on Tomahawk Nation. To me, a written format is better for junior day lists than a podcast format, personally. But that's just a little preview of some guys that I'm excited to see that they're getting up there.
But probably an appropriate place to think Madison Social and the people at For the Table Restaurant Group, somebody that we've been able to partner with since day one. We could not have anybody better to work with, ever so fortunate, and we're excited. We're excited to be able to continue to work with them, and we're really excited to be able to talk about something that will be new for us and have a little bit of a in-person interaction and experience leading up to the spring game.
Absolutely, man. Madison Social and the Ford Table Restaurant Group, they've been with us since the beginning. Maybe do a little debut a new beer at Township for a little pregame action for the spring game. Pretty awesome. A chance to come meet us, come interact, come meet fellow Knollcast fans and fellow Knolls at a great Knoll-owned business before you get to watch the new offense in Doak Campbell Stadium. So very appreciative of those guys.
All right, bud. Want to introduce a new segment here. Brought to you, the listener, by our friends at Resolution Home Loans. So we are really proud to be able to work with them and have been thrilled with the response that we've received so far from you, the listener. So thank you so much for that. And, Bud, let's play a little game of buy or sell here. So we've got we asked for a couple suggestions, ended up having, I don't know, 60 or 70 people respond. So that's pretty nice. We weren't short on possible topics, but let's just rattle off a couple of quick things that were sent back our way via social media.
Yeah, this would be cool. So look, buy or sell, if it's just buy, sell, we think it's kind of boring. So we're going to kind of go buy or sell, and then we'll tell you kind of why we're picking that. Also, all y'all that always say we should disagree more, hopefully we will have some disagreement about this. We try to pick ones that are not quite so obvious, but maybe some of them are going to be obvious at times. It'll be obvious to us, and y'all might disagree. So that's kind of cool. You ever think about that? You could have internal disagreement with the host. That's another form of disagreement for those of y'all who want us to disagree more. Or we could just start guessing. Maybe if we just guessed at stuff instead of asking sources and doing research, then we could just throw out hot takes and just guess about stuff. You know, like when people Absolutely. Ask us about how the spring game format is, we answered it. When they ask other shows, they just kind of guess. All right. Whatever you prefer.
My okay. Co-host is absolutely hilarious sometimes. Let's jump.
Five stars on iTunes, y'all. we're closing in on 2,000 of those, by the way. So that'll be pretty cool when we finally get those. Okay, Ingram, here's the first buy or sell: attrition of five or more guys after spring ball.
After spring ball, I think that number's a little high. I will sell on that. I'm not sure I expect quite that many to walk.
I agree, because Boselli already bounced and a couple other guys already bounced. I'm also going to go with sell, unfortunately. No Resolution Home Loans for that one, although maybe the buyer of that house after they sold it could use them. Here's one. Quarterback Bailey Hockman takes meaningful snaps this season. What? I guess we got to define meaningful. What do we define as meaningful? Like snaps in a game that's like the scores within two scores?
Snaps in a game that's not considered some type of garbage time. Yeah. Two scores would be fine. I would certainly take that.
I'm going to buy. I think that there's a chance that maybe Taggart wants to get everybody some playing time, or there's a chance that, look, James Blackman is still, despite the fact that Taggart described him as heavens of curves now instead of being flat, which is hilarious, he's still really skinny. So there's a chance he could get banged up for a player or two. I'm definitely going to buy that. We had a bunch of them that were asking us, is Hockman going to start? But I think that's kind of – I don't think that he will at this point. But meaningful snaps, I'm buying.
And I'd love to see Hockman do well. I see your points with just the general concern about some of the past history of the quarterback position as far as injury goes. and Blackman's a large target. But I think the fact that Hawkman's still three on the depth chart is telling, and I will sell this with obviously the caveat that if I do see it happen, I'm not sure it's not necessarily a good thing. So I will sell and hope that in the long run I'm right.
Oh, I like your answer there. Okay. Florida State will average 35 or more points per game.
Buy. Yes.
Yeah, I'm definitely buying. They actually did this. If you go back and look, Florida State averaged that many points last year. Obviously, they did not. 2016, they hit it 35-1. 2015, no. They hit like 31-7. 2014, 33-7. 2013, 51-6. That was quite a few. 2012, 39-3. Jimbo's teams did it three times in 7 years. I do think that they will be able to do it. We also have a lot of defensive talent leaving the ACC, and you're playing at a much greater pace this year. So, yeah, I'm definitely taking the over on 35 points per game. By the way, y'all, we have a pretty good bank of questions, but we don't have a great bank of buy or sell topics. So if you hear us answer one of these and you have kind of a spinoff of one of those, feel free to hit us up. Email thenolcast@gmail.com or hit us on Twitter at Nolcast. Try not to DM us questions if you can. I'm not trying to say this like don't be in our DMs. You know, if you have a non-show question or something cool or a show idea, but we have our producer go through our Twitter to look for stuff, and you can't really search your DMs the same way you can search like your mentions. So it's just easier for us for show aggregation and when we put together the show notes if you just ask us openly on Twitter. Ingram, here you go. Three separate running backs with at least 500 rushing yards each.
Interesting. Man, this is a tough one. I'm going to sell this. I don't know that the third will be there. I certainly think if everybody's healthy that Akers and Patrick get there. It's a great thing if it happens. At least it's a great thing in the scenario that I have in my mind. If Cam Akers gets injured in game four, then no, that's probably not a great thing. But I will sell this, and this will be one of the ones that I watch throughout the year. I think this one is a really good number, and I tip my hat to whoever it was that submitted this particular question.
That is a well-made number. I'm going to sell as well, and it's because they have almost so much depth that, yes, I absolutely buy that Akers and Patrick will have more than 500. You know, will Laybourne and Rasul and Zaquandre, look, they could get 1,000 between the three of them. And none of them hit 500.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that's even if they average, you know, if you average 5 yards a carry, you still need 100 carries to get to 500 yards. That's an awful lot. So I'm going to go ahead and sell on that one. Ingram, buy or sell? One of the former single digit number guys does not earn his number back.
Good question.
Now, hold on. I will pull this up.
I'm pretty confident about the defensive guys getting theirs back.
Do you want to know who they were? The guys, yeah. Or just for listeners at home, James Blackman, Levante Taylor, Cam Akers, Derwin James. Obviously, Derwin. Yeah,
that'd be a hell of a story if we were.
Yeah, that breaking. LeBourne, McFadden gone. Dontavius Jackson, Devontae Phillips gone. Trey McKitty, Matthew Thomas gone. Ryan Green gone, Ermin Lane gone, Nyquan Murray, Stanford Samuels III, Jaquez Patrick, Josh Sweat. Obviously, you know, yeah. Sweat's gone. I got to tell you, man, I'm confident in like five of the nine. I'm leaning yes on seven or eight of the nine.
But yeah, yeah. I think all the defensive guys, I say yes on.
Yeah, I think that's actually, yeah. I think the defensive guys and Akers.
Yeah. Yeah, Cam, trust me, Cam Akers can wear whatever damn jersey number he wants to. Yes, in the end, I think everybody earns their jersey back. I do. Maybe a situation where wide receiver or tight end, you don't, but I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say like seven or eight, but not a full nine. Because look, there's going to be other guys who are going to want to get those numbers,
mm-hmm.
who might outwork them. So I'm going to sell this. But that's a good question too. I like that. It's very topical. It's something we discussed in the show.
Yeah, we've had some nice response to these so far. So thank you very much. But next one, Brian Burns, does he record 11 or more sacks? or finish in the top 20 in sacks.
Okay, let's go quickly for some context here. Sacks on defense, top 20 nationally, you would need, last year you would have needed 9. So I'm going to say yes, that he does. I think Brian Burns, I think Forest State will have a lead in more games this year than they did last year. I think that they will, you know, obviously the opponent will have to pass a lot more. I think Burns will be freed up to rush the passer a good bit. And, you know, if you listen to Mark Snyder out there, what's he telling him? Go get paid. Go dominate. And Burns, I think, will have a good bounce back year after a bit of a sophomore slump. So I'm going to say bye.
I, too, am going to buy, although I think Burns certainly benefited on who was lining up at the other end position and won't have that luxury as much, although Kane Doe's a hell of a player. I'll buy. I think you get this. I think Burns could be in a position to have another 14, 15 sacks type season.
Good number, though. I got to tell you, these odds makers are... y'all are thinking about becoming bookies, that's not a terrible idea. Okay, next one's kind of long, but we're going to read it. CFB is cyclical besides Bama. Clemson has been on the rise the past 5 years. Buy or sell that they've hit their peak and they will decline the next 5 years. So I'm basically saying, like, this is saying that Clemson's next five will not be as good as their previous five?
I guess in this instance, you're either buying their decline or selling the idea of it.
Their last 5 years, 11-2, Orange Bowl, 10-3, Russell Athletic Bowl, 14-1, Orange Bowl, 14-1, Fiesta Bowl. The first 14-1 year, they lost the national title game. Second year, they went 14-1-16. They won the national title game. This year, they made the playoffs at 12. You know, they went 12-2. They lost to Alabama. So that is, looks like 9 losses and 61-9. That right in their last 5 years? That's
right.
Yeah. I'm going to buy that they're not going to go 61-9 in their next five seasons and that they probably will not make the playoffs 3 out of 5 years. So yeah. Buy.
I think buy. I'm not sure you'll necessarily see that immediately at the end of this year coming up, but Clemson's done some great things. I tip my hat to them. It's also really, and Dabo has a great culture there, but it's really, really hard to maintain that culture, particularly when you've got a lot of kids who have already done the work necessary to earn the paycheck and are still in the program. And that is very much what they will have this year. So interested to watch them. But yeah, the idea that they're going to repeat the last half decade and turn it into the norm for them, I have a hard time seeing that.
Buy or sell, Florida State will be in the top 35 nationally in plays per game in 2018. Now, last year, to be in the top 35 nationally, you had to run 75 plays a game. Florida State, Agram, they just missed it. They were 114th nationally in plays a game. So can they improve 69 spots? That would be really nice.
I will buy that that they find themselves in the top 35 this year.
Yeah, I think they will. I think they're going to have to score some points because I don't think the defense is going to be as good. Obviously, they lost a boatload of talent off a really talented defense. So they're going to have to score a lot of points, and I agree they're going to try to push tempo and really emphasize that. Buy or sell, Coach Taggart has Francois maturing at a level that makes him a valuable team member.
Not in a place to buy this currently.
Yeah, I'm going to sell. Not saying it can't happen, but... I'm not convinced that the rate of maturation currently is what's needed. Now, maybe the maturation rate can kick into overdrive in the summer months or something like that. But right now, I'm going to have to sell. I agree with you. Buy or sell, Jimbo staying 5 or more seasons at Texas A&M.
So the number here is really good. Again, I know we've said that, but this is a – well-written question. I'm going to sell the idea that he's there for more than 5 years, or 5 years or more.
I'm going to buy. Okay, so we have disagreement. I like this.
We do.
All right. Why are you going under? Because this is a 10-year fully guaranteed deal. Now, we know the A&M people told us if he fails, you know, that $75 million guarantee is no sweat for them. They can just, you know, that's just oil money.
I don't doubt that at all.
They break evens in the Permian, Ingram, are just... You know, they're at a billion.
And this is not taking a shot at a guy. This is not sour grapes or anything, but I have concern with professional burnout with Jimbo Fisher. And I'm sure that a change of scenery will help him. But I've got a pretty good understanding as to how things played out last year. And I just don't know that there's kind of a, there's a professional expectation that even if you're leaving, even if things are going horrible, you still do what it is for the job that you signed up for. And I know that there was deep animosity. I know that he was frustrated with a lot of things in Tallahassee and wanted to leave. But I really question the effort that was turned in general, and wonder if that's someone that wouldn't be well served to maybe leave the coaching scene for a year or two.
Certainly. I mean, given everything that's happened, you know, personally, there's no doubt that's, but I still believe the guy can be do a really bang up job as a change agent. Yep. What I didn't see him do was be a good maintainer of culture. You know, he kind of stopped following his own process, you know, or at least did not hold the team to it. 5 years is enough to change the culture and then backslide for one before you bounce. If this question said 6 or 7+, I might sell it, but I'm going to buy it because it says 5.
He's going to get 4.
Yeah.
4 is guaranteed. So really this is almost a question as to whether or not that fourth year, obviously it could go south faster than that, but whether or not that fourth year is a disaster enough for a party to swallow a $75 million guaranteed contract.
So you're thinking they're going to fire him.
Yes. Well, I think he'll leave. I think he will leave, or performance will not be up to par for what they've decided that how many national championships they're already going to win.
Okay, I got you. So it's, yeah, because I think if he leaves on his own accord instead of being fired before 5 years, then he gets labeled as a quitter.
Or he's taking the Bama job or something like that.
Well, yeah, if he does that, then they've probably made the playoff.
Yeah.
The other reason why I think these questions are so good as far as the numbers is because I selected them. There were a lot of the questions that y'all hit us with. We had like 70 responses in an hour. That's really impressive. We do ask that if you send us a buy or sell question, kind of think about it. You know, like think about, hey, this is a good number. This is something I could reasonably see happening or not happening. Like, you know, Cam Akers scores a touchdown. We're probably not going to include that in the list. Three more here. Buy or sell. FSU's defense finishing in the season top 25 in total defense.
I'll buy that. I will.
Ooh, I'm going to sell that, man. I think that because they're going to run more plays, they're going to score more points. And I think they're going to outscore their opponents by more on a per-game basis, too. But I do think that the opponent's going to get more at-bats. So the per-game numbers on defense are going to go up. Now, this is something we've been ahead of the curve on, by the way, for a long time. And I'm proud of it because it's just common sense to me. But hopefully everybody will eventually get here. This is why we focus on per play numbers. It's tempo-free stats. You're evaluating efficiency. Tempo is a good thing. If you evaluate stats without controlling for tempo, that's not real bright. Total defense is not a real good stat to use, but that's what the question asked. And because the other team is going to get probably between 1 to 2, maybe 3 more possessions per game, that's going to give more chance to rack up yards and garbage yards. And to me, the fact that the defense lost a lot of talent, and I think it'll take a step back this year, and I think I would have said that regardless of who Jimbo brought in as defensive coordinator or who Taggart did, I'm gonna sell that. Man, like this disagreement. This is good. We need more of this in this show.
Yeah, I personally think you for the total defense part of that, you may well be correct in the end of things, but I really think we have a chance to field a defense with. We have a different type of attitude and intention, and you just got to have that if you're going to play defense at a high level. And I think that you didn't have that out of a lot of guys playing last year. So I think a difference in mentality and a little bit more of a dog out there from some of your starters that I'm pretty excited what you're going to see out of the defense.
I don't like hot sauce in food, so I put Louisiana hot sauce in quesadillas and Bloody Marys. Buy or sell?
Sir, what kind of question is this? Of course you're buying that. I mean, Bloody Marys and hot sauce, that's there's not a Bloody Mary called the Nullcast at Madison Social for you know, that wasn't an accident. It's a pairing that was meant to be, and most certainly would include that in a Bloody Mary.
I totally agree. That's an obvious buy. Pandering to our sponsors will always get you on the show. Buy or sell. Linebacker play this year will be the best FSU has had since 2013.
I mean, you really haven't had great linebacker play in a while, so I don't know that you're going out on a limb to. I don't know. This is a tough question. All right,
let's go behind the curtain a little bit here. Without naming names of specific kids, the old staff called these guys the speed bumps, which was kind of hilarious. They thought these linebackers just kind of sucked and that they were not very talented or focused or really just talented. Like they thought there were some misses in recruiting.
The one that you had, it never clicked consistently. I mean, you had a guy with all the talent in the world, but you just couldn't get that to translate. Enough times unnecessarily or unfortunately.
It is their own fault because they were recruiting them. It wasn't like a different staff recruited the speed bumps.
And they were coaching them. I'll point that.
Yeah, they were in charge of developing them, right.
You could develop said speed bump. So hope that was a good chuckle for you. But yeah.
Oh, man. I'm going to sell, I think. Because the Hoskins-Thomas duo in 14 when they were actually healthy and on the field wasn't terrible.
It was pretty decent at times.
Hey, did you see this? Leonard Hamilton gave tips on how to look 20 years younger than you actually are. We should probably read this. This is from The Athletic. Or he turned 70 in August, excuse me. So yeah. Do you have any aging tips? They're trying to age gracefully. It's from Sam Vicini or something like or Vicini of The Athletic. I feel like everybody writes for The Athletic now. I'm going to be leaving for The Athletic. No, not. Hamilton goes, no, I was not expecting that. I think my mother was 97. Obviously, she passed some pretty good genes down to me, but I think more than anything else, I enjoy what I do. I don't really feel stressed or pressured. I really enjoy working with young people. I think the most important thing that we do is we take youngsters when they're teenagers and we nurture them into young adulthood. I think we sometimes as coaches the pressure to win and win championships where I have plenty of rings, plenty of watches, Coach of the Year awards, but I get more excited when I'm invited to their wedding. When they ask me to be the godfather of their kids, when they call me and ask me for personal things that are going on in their life or decisions they need to make, to me, what type of husbands, fathers, neighbors, and citizens they become are probably the paramount thing that we do. So I take my job seriously and I enjoy what I do. That's part of the reason why I'm able to feel as good and maintain the level of health that I've been able to, because I'm excited every day I come to work that I have the opportunity as a staff to impact young folks' lives. I enjoy it. I think sometimes when you enjoy what you do, it allows you to eat well, pair well. I don't sleep very much, but I never have. So other than that, I try to eat right. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I do curse every once in a while. Other than that, I said some things my mother probably wouldn't be happy with. God rest her soul. So cool answer from Leonard. Anyway, Ingram, I have noticed a sharp decrease in the number of people in the last, I would say, 5 days who want to fire Leonard Hamilton.
You haven't seen as much of that expressed recently, huh?
It's very strange. But you notice when they lose, it's because of poor coaching. When they win, it's because of athleticism.
I have noticed that, most definitely. Mm-hmm. I have. You've just out-coached. Man, Ham, good for him. Great moment for him. It is hilarious that the gentleman's 70 years old and looks like he's, I don't know, 52, 48, somewhere in that area.
Also, can we appreciate... Like, you know, when we talk about Spurrier, how he, like, totally reinvented his offense when he came back from the NFL, right? And from the fun and gun to a lot of, like, QB run stuff and had success with it, too, at South Carolina. I don't know if Ham gets enough credit for just completely changing how he coached. They used to be, like, one of those boring, unwatchable products for the casual basketball fan out there, scoring, like, 40, 45 points a game, defense. Now they actually score. They run up and down the court. It's an entertaining, exciting product, and yet they're still winning. Like, to be able to flip what you do, become more entertaining, embrace a different style, and win that way too, to me, that's good coaching, man. That's impressive.
It's been remarkable to watch, and it's the program's in a good place. Obviously had a nice little tournament run here, has a nice young roster with some exciting pieces. It'll be fun to see what they can, you know, how they can springboard off this experience and what the future holds. So That was buy or sell with a quick conversation about aging gracefully and one more look back and kind of just appreciation for what the basketball team's given us over the past week or so.
Brought to you by Resolution Home Loans. That's 844-FSU-LOAN or FSUHomeLoans.com.